Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 19th, 2016. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, good. So, D.R., there was some fabulously good news that came down this week for climate hawks in Massachusetts and beyond. As you know, and everyone who listens to this podcast knows, for some time we've been discussing the possibility of having people who buy electricity be forced to pay a tariff on their electricity bill, or a tax, you might call it, in order to purchase and to pay for the pipeline that brings natural gas to the electricity plant. It's kind of a convoluted concept, very murky. But tell me, I'll let you explain, DR, what happened this week that brings happiness to the everyday climate hawk?
Well, in a unanimous 7-0 decision, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court declared, in essence, read our lips, no new pipeline taxes. They ruled that an effort by the Baker administration to force ratepayers to foot the bill for the construction of new fracked gas pipelines was illegal, declaring that the proposal violated a 1997 law that was intended by the legislator to prevent ratepayers in Massachusetts from being ripped off in this fashion. Mm-hmm. And they basically declared that this idea is simply a non-starter, and that the legislature wanted to make sure that, you know, the companies that wanted to build these sorts of pipelines pay for it themselves and not stick it onto the ratepayers,
so to speak. So tell me, what the let's talk for a minute about the background and how it came to be that the court made the final decision, right? Mm-hmm. So my memory is that the pipeline companies in cahoots with the utilities saw mm-hmm. that they could not sell long-term contracts for the natural gas that was going to go through the pipes. Mm-hmm. So they proceeded, got this idea, and they went to the Baker administration, who said, fine, we will have the ratepayers pay for it because they're mm-hmm. going to benefit in the long run. It's all going to be cheaper. It's all going to be wonderful. So the Baker administration told the Department of Public Utilities, the DPU, to make a rule to allow that, mm-hmm. so that the utilities could charge the ratepayers to pay the pipeline people. And that was going forward. In fact, the utilities had made an application to the DPU, when along came the Conservation Law Foundation and challenged that whole system in a court case, right?
Mm-hmm. There are actually two challenges which I believe were consolidated by the Conservation Law Foundation and by NG Gas and LNG, which liquefied natural gas, which would be a competitor to fracked gas. They both challenged this decision by the Department of Public Utilities, and apparently the two legal challenges were combined into one for purposes of this case.
So there you go. You got this court case going on, this administrative thing that the Baker administration was trying to do. And in the same time frame, along comes the Omnibus Energy Bill, right? Mm-hmm. So, which we just talked about a couple of weeks and just got passed. And there was a lot of discussion about whether or not the legislature should step in and ban this kind of activity, right, of having mm-hmm. the ratepayers pay. And, of course, the Omnibus Energy Bill never actually got that language, right?
The guys
didn't have enough moxie to put it in the bill, right?
The legislature punted, but the Supreme Judicial Court did not.
And it's
one of these things that reaffirms, as we've had discussions for years now, about the importance of courts, state in this case, and also federal courts, in terms of taking action on energy and climate issues in the face of, shall we say, recalcitrance on the part of the state legislature.
Right. So the as we say, the state legislature punted, but then this court case that was going on in parallel finally made it to the SJC, the Supreme Judicial Court, and they were 7-0, you say. So that's pretty unanimous, pretty clear-cut that it was not a lot of debate there, huh?
Exactly.
Okay, so now the plan that the Baker administration and the utilities had cooked up to pay for these pipelines is now illegal. Right? Mm-hmm. So tell me, DR, there's lots of fallout, so to speak, lots of implications of that. Tell me a few of them. What are some of the things? We'll have to, they're all over the lot. But first of all, tell me, do environmentalists like it? the outcome, did the utilities not like it? I mean, what's going on there?
There's been the usual belly aching from the utilities about the decision and claiming that they're so disappointed over the fact that they couldn't get what they want. Obviously, there's a lot of celebration from climate activists who've been pointing out that the proposed fracked gas pipeline is not needed to satisfy the state's energy needs.
And it freezes us into another 70 years of natural gas infrastructure, right?
Exactly. Obviously, the utilities are making a lot of noise about trying to figure out some other way to sort of get this proposed pipeline enacted, but you have to think in terms of the PR headaches and the business headaches of trying to build something that so many people have said is not needed. You do wonder if the utilities and if the fracked gas companies will go forward with this. The Boston Globe noted that, you know, Kinder Morgan decided to drop an effort to build a fracked gas pipeline. Will Spectra Energy, which is the company that's basically the focus of this legal action, will they also decide to wash their hands of this as well?
Yeah, you have to imagine that if they could not get paying customers and they had to resort to this legal trick in order to get the money, and then that trick gets declared illegal, might they just walk away and say, okay, all you people will freeze in your houses when we can't get you enough gasoline, natural gas in on the coldest days. But tell me this, DR, do you think now that this pipeline has gone away, even the environmentalists say that we need to build the clean energy infrastructure to manage the demand on those worst days, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think that this will spur the legislature to take even further action past the omnibus bill? Part of the issue would be, you know, when there is this magical demand for this peak of natural gas, you have to have a way to either turn down some industries, reapportion the gas, you know, find a way through those 2 days when it's really, really cold. And how are they going to do that? What do you think?
It does raise the question of whether or not there'll be, shall we say, an omnibus energy bill too, that sort of accomplishes the goals that the first omnibus energy bill did not, because obviously, you know, with the planned closure of the Pilgrim nuclear power plant and the fact that that this unnecessary fracked gas pipeline may not be built, obviously it reaffirms the fact that the state needs as much clean energy as possible, and the legislature has to move to get that clean energy enacted.
I mean, one of the ways that, you know, one of the obvious ways that you can prepare for these temporary natural gas shortfalls is to encourage people to insulate their homes, right?
Exactly.
Mundane, simple things, right? Just get more people to put in more insulation so that the demand on the natural gas goes down. I mean, those are, what do they call them, negative watts that you don't have to produce, right?
Exactly.
And that's one obvious path going forward. It's not very sexy, but it really has a big multiplier in terms of preparing for the future.
I mean, exactly.
So there's the question of what is, you know, can the state now put together a coherent plan to address the issues that you can foresee? Because it's there, but it's in tandem with the whole clean energy revolution. But then I guess the other question is, there are still ongoing pipelines. I mean, one in particular that we've talked about a lot is the West Roxbury Lateral Pipeline. So that's a short, relatively short, I don't know, 5-10 mile kind of pipeline that is cutting through the suburb of West Roxbury. People have been being regularly arrested there every Friday morning, I think, for the last couple of months. We did a show on it a few weeks ago, interviewing Chuck Collins, who is one of the leaders of it. So tell me, is that over? Is that done with? Or is that still a thing?
Well, there continue to be protests, and it does raise the question of whether or not these protests will be successful enough to enact, shall we say, a people's veto of the pipeline. Could the people essentially work as a de facto SJC and strike down this pipeline?
This particular West Roxbury lateral, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I guess my question is whether or not it becomes an irrelevant thing now. I mean, does it have a viability if they don't do the rest of the rest of the pipeline?
That's a very good question. And if they do decide to abandon it, you know, how what will they do to try to recoup their investment? Will they simply try to write it off, or what exactly, what sort of chicanery will the organization pull to try to recoup their investment?
Yeah, so I mean, if you know what the future of the West Roxbury Lateral Pipeline is, please drop us a line. It's not for lack of interest. It's just, you know, events are happening so quickly, I wasn't able to follow through. But I guess the other interesting implication of all of this, DR, is that, of course, these pipelines, this natural gas pipeline, starts in Pennsylvania, goes across New York, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and into Massachusetts. And only in Massachusetts has the legal prohibition happen, right? Mm-hmm. But it affects a pipeline across a bunch of different states. So, I mean, the ripple effect of this decision is pretty big, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And there is also an interesting controversy going around in Rhode Island. The Rhode Island Public Utilities Commission is considering a request from National Grid to essentially do the same thing that the utilities here in Massachusetts were trying to do, which is trying to stick it to the tax, to the ratepayers, to pay for a new pipeline. And a lot of observers in Rhode Island are saying that if there is a legal challenge to this effort to try to get the ratepayers in Rhode Island to pay for a new fracked gas infrastructure, the Rhode Island courts may take a look at what Massachusetts did and may decide that Massachusetts got it right and stop this effort in Rhode Island. You'd figure that the Public Utilities Commission in the Ocean State might not want to do something that would cause those oceans to rise.
Yes, absolutely. Well, good for Rhode Island, but I think it's really an interesting thing that the multi-state consequence of this is a good thing. But then another question that pops up, there's so many implications of these kinds of decisions. I guess we've got to ask, what was the role of the climate activist in stopping this? Because it looks like the fatal blow, the coup de grace, I guess you could call it, whatever killed this thing, was a legal maneuver, right?
Yes.
The Conservation Law Foundation. Do you think that they were looking, do you think the Supreme Judicial Court was looking to the opposition in the streets? I mean, should they? I mean, if they did, should they? And would this have happened if the Conservation Law Foundation had been all on its own?
Well, if the voices of the people are citing making a compelling legal argument, I don't see why those voices should be ignored. It's interesting, you know, we always make the comparison between climate activism and civil rights activism, and you look at the history in the United States, where if you could not get justice through the legislature, you had to turn to the courts. You know, you couldn't get desegregation through a legislature, you had to turn to the courts.
Right.
You couldn't get fair housing through a legislature, you had to turn to the courts, that sort of thing. And here, once again, you couldn't get the legislature to say, don't screw the ratepayers. You had to get the courts to say, don't screw the ratepayers. So you're seeing history repeating itself.
And I guess that's a legitimate argument, because the court does tend to reflect the not in a specific way, they're not doing polls, but generally the court is trying to keep pace with public opinion, and there was a fair amount of obvious resistance to the pipeline. They had to have known that, right, when they made this decision, and I think you're right. I mean, the same thing is true with many of the civil rights landmark victories, right? We're not, I mean, there were people fighting for it, but then the courts came along and backed it up, but the courts were aware and had learned what the right thing to do is. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, I guess that's a case to keep on fighting the pipeline, right? Because in this instance, the pipeline fighters never got to the point, with the exception perhaps of West Roxbury Lateral, where they had to lay their bodies down in front of the pipeline. But, I mean, that was mm-hmm. still an option for the climate act, for the people opposing the pipelines, right?
Exactly. Like the old song from the 60s goes, you keep on pushing.
That's right. That's right. So, tell me, do you think that we're going to see any more of these kind of whack-a-mole projects come up? I mean, we've had two of them, right? Is it over? I don't know.
You can't underestimate the greed of the fracked gas industry. So somebody tells me they may try to pull something else, but, you know, if they try to pull something else, the people will, I say again, keep on pushing against it.
Well, dear, I guess we should celebrate our victory. We're grateful for all the legal eagles that went down and did the right work in front of the Supreme Judicial Court. What we'll tell our folks is that they can hook up with links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It'll be at massclimateaction.net/blog. We'll put up the Globe and Mass Live. There's a bunch of Commonwealth Magazine, lots of good articles. You can find us on Facebook at /MassClimateAction. Please share us with your friends so they can hear about the show. You can, of course, listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. And you can find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Please subscribe to us. It pushes up our numbers. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening, and ding dong, the witch is dead. See you all next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.